Rockstep Radio on demand with Kevin Leach.
We're here in Leeds, Northern England for the Teapots and Twirls weekend. I'm joined by Kevin and Joe. Welcome to Rockstep Radio.
Thank
Great to
you.
Be here.
So you've been here teaching for this weekend. How was Leeds?
A little rainy, but quite charming.
Surprisingly sunny at unexpected moments.
There was an hilarious moment during the workshop where just when the sun came out, everybody went for the curtains and dragged them all across the windows. No, stop the sun.
We noticed that as well. It was very interesting. We thought that was maybe a northerner thing.
I think it was maybe in people's eyes, but it was, you know, it was a strange idea. I didn't understand it either.
I wanted to take my clothes off and sunbathe immediately.
I'm glad you didn't, Kevin. You just finished another swing castle camp in Germany a few weeks ago. How was that?
Sodom and Gomorrah of Lindy Hop.
It was a party of a good time.
So the title kind of suggests what it is.
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds amazing.
It is. It was.
It was outstanding.
Was it your idea?
No, somebody else put it on, and I think when they were trying to figure out who would be some good poster children for the workshop, our names surprisingly came up, and they thought that we would be a nice addition to the camp.
Nice. And it's in its, what, third year now? How long have you been
doing
it?
That was the second year.
Second.
So 2016 will be number three.
And it's already planned, it's happening?
Yes.
Yes.
It's happening. The dates are at the end of September next year.
And what can people expect from Swing Castle Camp?
You should come with an open mind, be prepared to dance, and take classes.
There is a quaint little bar, but you can still BYO. You definitely want to make sure that your friends are there with you over the week, because it's definitely, it's hangout time. Like, it just feels like you're in somebody's very large house, kicking it with your friends, and there happen to be some Lindy Hop classes going on at the same time.
I think one of the great aspects is that there's no need for logistics. As soon as you arrive, your logistics are over. Food is provided, dance floor is provided, live music's provided, the bar is there, you have a sauna, you have a swimming pool.
There's internet.
Yeah, the internet.
Phew. I know, otherwise, right? I wouldn't be there.
Right.
It's funny, but they actually bring in someone who sets up routers throughout the castle. So they endeavor to make every spot a hotspot in the castle.
Now at Harang, it's banned. What's the best approach? Because there's an argument, isn't there, that says you're here to dance, we don't need the internet.
It's not banned, it's segregated.
Right.
There's clear spots where you're allowed to do internet, and there are other spots where it's discouraged.
You can't just have a laissez-faire attitude to the internet in the year 2050. It's got to be carefully managed, yeah.
That's the irony of Harang, is because actually the internet is everywhere in Harang. It's just you're discouraged from using it.
Of course.
But I think the idea is that when you're in the Foketsus, or when you are in the main hall, that you're not playing on your cell phone, but instead you're present with other people. So I'm pretty sure they're trying to support a positive attitude towards connect to humans and not to your device.
I get that. I completely get that. So you've been doing this together now for, what, 8 years?
8 years, a little bit more.
Wow. Now that's, in many ways, that's a long time, but it's I guess it flies by. And in terms of dancing, I suppose it's no time at all.
No, it's been a long, torturous 8 years with Joe Alperg.
What level of commitment has it taken to kind of get to where you are now in that relatively short space of time?
I would say I feel like I have been pretty fortunate, because when I signed on to do this, Kevin already had so much more experience. So I felt like we had to actually get me up the line so that I could bring 50% to the partnership. So, I mean, for me, it was somewhat of a stumbling commitment in terms of, I've graduated from uni. Well, now what do I do? I guess Kevin Saint Laurent is offering a potential partnership on a silver platter. I just have to not F it up too badly. And then just being present and being able to kind of learn the tricks of the trade to make sure that I was a worthy business partner worth keeping around.
A willingness to sleep on average in two different beds a week.
And how do you stay at the top? You're at a considerable level in your dancing career. How do you stay there?
Well, I guess you consider us at the top. Is this what the top feels like?
We've been poisoning the other instructors, so they're dying off.
Arsenic.
So,
it's slow, tasteless, odorless.
Do you want to stay here? Not in Leeds, obviously. That would be ridiculous.
Let's be serious. No, not Leeds.
Not Leeds. I would love to maintain my position as long as I continue to earn it. And at some point, I feel like if I am not continuing to add value to the Lindy Hop scene, I'm hoping that the next generation will come up and replace me so that the scene continues to grow. Because the scene is larger than I am, and should be larger than we are, because there's so much joy that it brings to so many people around the world, that it would truly be a heartbreak if two people left, that the entire thing fell apart. So as long as I think I'm useful, I feel like I would like to stay here, and then when I'm not, voila.
I will be honored as long as we are invited to continue to teach, and as soon as the invitations cease, I will do something else.
So what is it about performing and competing, which are big parts of your life, what is it that makes you want to do that, that drives you on to keep going back?
I want to be a star on the West End. No, as an American, typically you want to be on Broadway. But I think in some ways getting to dress up and play a role that isn't necessarily me, but somebody that I get to be for a couple of minutes, that was originally a huge draw, that it felt like, oh, I can be super fancy for like three whole minutes while holding on to somebody's hand. And then I felt like, okay, well, actually, there's maybe some very fun costumes that I would get to wear. And so this whole performance business with the wardrobe was hugely attractive. But then also getting to spend time working on a particular skill and having a deadline where I had to showcase it was very familiar to being in school, where you have a final paper due and you need to work your tail off so that you have something to turn in. And hopefully you're turning in products or presentations that you were proud of. So in some ways it felt like this is just an extension of the reality of what the world looked like when I grew up, but just also the thrill of getting to be in front of other people and to cheer. Like, there's something so very rewarding about that.
I would say the social aspect of the dance keeps me there. The community. Living in a non-corporate world is very satisfying.
But then there is an element, you're your own corporation in many ways, aren't you? You know, there's a serious business element here as well.
Joe and I are
CEO.
Serious about our business, but I wouldn't consider it a serious business. It's a very free-flowing, creative endeavor that Joe and I choose, but there's a lot of, I guess, not compromises, but there's a lot of
non-traditional paths
that you have to be willing to accept.
And are you not just making life difficult for yourselves by kind of pushing on and say, yeah, we're going to do that competition and we're going to do that? You know, could you not just say now, we'll just chill out a bit? You know, San Francisco's a great city. You know, there's plenty to do there. You know, just concentrate on the scene there and just relax a bit.
I think that would change our longevity, but it would also change our role in the community based on how visible we are. As long as we stay visible on the international scene, people can still decide if we have value in that particular way. So I think if we were to move ourselves, let's say, to San Francisco and live there full time, we would find a new corner for ourselves. And I think the locals would then either decide if we were worthy keeping or if we would be off the island. So I think depending on the life decisions that we make, hopefully we're in a community that is supportive enough to accept that as the reality, and then we can continue to work together. But it would slightly change the dynamics. Now, could we ever come back? Maybe, but that is personally yet to be seen for us since we've been on the road for so long.
I feel I would have to work just as hard locally as I do internationally.
Is plane travel, would you say you enjoy plane travel? Is it a chore, or is you just accept that it's part of your life?
I think I've learned to accept it, and as a result, I take advantages from it. In many ways, we use plane travel as downtime, as a day off. People complain about long travel, and there's an element that I cherish, to sit in a comfortable chair watching endless stupid movies while someone serves me food. It's pretty.
There are worse ways to live, right?
Seriously. I mean, that's pretty spectacular. And at the other end, I show up in a foreign country that I've never been to, and I meet new people, and I'm in a foreign culture, and my world, traveling consistently for 15 years, my world perspective has grown immensely. Those far outweigh the drudgery of getting on an airplane. No matter what job I have, there's always some sort of commute time. So if I have to commute locally, sitting in a car through traffic, or sitting on an airplane, they're both kind of the same. So when I used to commute via car, I would listen to books on tapes or listen to the radio or talk to people on the phone and really make use of that time. So I feel like anything you do in life is really your perspective and what you choose to make of it.
That doesn't mean that they're not crazy travel days where it just feels like I would give any amount of money to make this day end. But relatively, I think we try to find the silver lining in the situation because that's the reality that we've chosen for ourselves.
So this is your reality. This is your job. Does it still feel weird? So, you know, this is my job. When you get out of bed in the morning, have you accepted that?
I consider it my lifestyle more than a job. I actually quite amazed sometimes at the end of an amazing dance weekend that I get to go home with money and do something else with it, and I'm not broke at the end of the weekend because I feel like I should be broke because I've been doing nothing but having fun.
I go back and forth. I think sometimes I feel like, holy cow, I hit the jackpot, and other times I'm like, I guess I'll have to get a real job at some point here. So I feel like I go through the emotional roller coasters of accepting what it is that I've signed up for and what I've created. And then other times I just feel like I've lucked out. And then other times it just seems like this isn't real. Like this is just, I'm gonna wake up and this will have all just been a really wonderful dream that I had for an extended period of time.
And I mean, was it ever a plan for either of you? You know, did you ever dream of living the lifestyle that you live now? Or did you think you would have what you say is a normal job, whatever that is?
I didn't dream of it specifically because this didn't really exist in the Lindy world when I started. Mm-hmm. So it just sort of grew into it.
When I was 16, I remember I wanted to like travel and social dance. And I remember because Kevin was one of the top dancers in San Francisco when I was growing up. I remember thinking he basically got paid to social dance around the world. And I was like, I want to get paid to social dance around the world. That seems pretty great. Having no clear idea, but as Kevin said, like this job as we are doing it now, it didn't exist at the time. So it was hard to picture what it could be, as well as there's no way that I could explain to like my parents or to like career counselors what I was going for, because it wasn't there, and there wasn't another example that I saw that I was like, oh, the way that these people are doing it, I want to do the same thing, but within the Lindy Hop community. It just was a pipe dream that we kind of made. So we've carved it out, and the scene's been very supportive in terms of how we've kind of angled, and they've also, the scene itself has suggested, like, well, we need more of this, and we've been able to fill some of that demand.
As teachers and dancers, you're clearly very focused, very competitive, and I think that comes across. I've just enjoyed your lessons for the weekend, and I'm still alive. I've lived to tell the tale. you seem to demand that kind of commitment from your students as well. How do you balance that with keeping it fun as well? I mean, or, you know, does it even have to be fun? You know, what's the balance there?
Well, we find fun in hard work, and we trust that students are fundamentally the same. When you work hard at something and you find improvement, that's a joy that you experience, and that's where the happiness comes. It's not an instant happiness, but it's a worthwhile happiness. And Joe and I would say, are committed to that in our personal lives, so it's easy for us to commit to that in our teaching lives. And if people stick around long enough, they start to get the bug and they get hooked.
There are many different reasons why people come to classes, and I think the most value that we are able to bring is to students who are interested in learning and improving themselves. And they understand that the process of learning is sometimes uncomfortable because they're doing things that they're not comfortable doing. And for the people that I think really relish that experience, we can possibly, potentially, be great instructors for them. And for the people that find fun in that, then we get to be in the presence of them having a great time. And then I think other times people just feel like, I really just wanted to have like a nice easy weekend, learn a couple of figures, like spend time connecting with other people. And if that is their main focus, I think maybe then they feel like we've killed them or that we wanted no joy in their life, even though it's quite the contrary. We would love for people to have fun in a similar way that we see fun.
When you talk about fun and you referred briefly to your personal life, I mean, Is there even a personal life? I mean, you know, if you had time off, if you had a weekend off, let's just say, what would you be doing? Would you be looking for the nearest event or the best event to go dancing that weekend? Or would you just say, no, that's it. You know, we're chilling out. We're going to the movies or whatever.
Sometimes we do go to events when we have a weekend off. But on average, we're teaching about 35 weekends a year. I'm good with that. So when I have time to not go to an event, I'll go on a motorcycle tour, or I'll go sailing, or I'll go on a rock climbing trip, or I'll go visit friends and family. There's so many other things to do in the world.
Just not enough time.
Just not,
true.
Yeah, I think it depends. Also, like if we're in Europe and we have a weekend off, then we can go see some European friends. if we're in the United States, we have access to just different things. So if we've come off a 12-week tour, let's say, a weekend off is really nice. Let's say it's the start of a tour, we've only done 1 week, there's a weekend off and there's a huge event that we can easily get to, then that totally makes sense. So a lot of it comes down to logistical reasons more than anything else. But yeah, there's tons to do. There's friends to see. There's shows to attend. There's trips to go on.
Ironically, sometimes we've gone to events by ourselves or together to just enjoy. But as soon as we show up, we end up working.
Of course.
We substitute for a teacher, or they add a class, or they have us MC, or they want us to do a performance.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you're here, they say.
Yeah. I love it. Or, hey, could you help out with the thing? And you're like...
And it's hard to say no, and that's partly because of the community nature of it. Yeah. It's they feel like we can serve a role, and we're always excited to do that.
And then just send the bill afterwards, yeah.
Only if. The last event that I got to do that at was at Ljubljana Sweet Swing Festival, and I had just such an incredible time. A woman named Katya throws that event, and it's a fabulous event in a stunning location. And there were so many incredible people for me to dance with. It felt like, wow, I'm actually getting to dance all for myself. I don't have to wake up in the morning. I can stay out as late as I want. I can dance with whomever I want. And I can also just kick it. And it felt like it reminded me of why it's so amazing to be a part of the scene and what one of the other corners of this world is, since our corner is typically from the teaching angle and not always from the, I'm just going to be here and shoot the shit with everybody.
Same thing happened for me at Lindy Shock. Well, not same thing, but similar. Lindy Shock last year, Joe couldn't make it. She was on vacation. So I decided I'm going to go regardless. I love the event. But 3 weeks before the event, the organizer found out I was going and then ended up hiring me to teach with someone else anyway. And of course, it's hard to say no. So I said yes.
Let's talk about the film Control Alt Dance. You were both heavily involved. Yeah. It was a crowdfunded project. It takes a lot of effort to make a film. Yeah. You clearly worked hard on it, but that's a lot of work. Was it worth it?
For us, it was very straightforward. The directors called us and said, we'd like to hire you as choreographers. And we came in for a week. We did choreography. A couple weeks before, they said, oh, we were going to put you in the movie a little bit. We said, okay. So we were already on the road, so we just used the clothes that we had. So in a sense, it was very low key for us, and that was it. So we didn't really see the production side of it because it wasn't our project. We were just hired guns to come in and help.
We had some late working hours, and the conditions are not always set up because we weren't working with a $1 million budget where we like had trailers and we had makeup artists and we had plenty of staff running around doing all of the things that could possibly need to be dealt with. So on relatively a shoestring budget based on what movies and what talent actually costs, I think that it went off fairly well, and Jay and Brian did a fabulous job basically trying to get as much set up as possible. And there were definitely some things that I think if we could do it again, that we could be like, you know what would really help would be a thing and a thing and a thing. But just like everything, experience is just one of those things that takes time. And after you've done it, you can just remember it for the next round. So it wasn't wildly complicated, but it also wasn't like walking in and getting to teach at a weekend where you're like, oh, everything's just working. All I'm literally doing is arriving. I say a couple things and then I leave. It was slightly more complicated.
The shoot schedule was 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. So we slept during the day. And we would film and choreograph. But even when
you have no body clock, your body clock's a distant memory.
It wobbles.
Yeah, wobbles.
That's a really
lot.
Good description.
Yeah.
Right, before we go, let's rattle through some questions. We asked Rockstep Radio listeners for their questions on social media. Felix says, do you think YouTube and international teachers take away regional styles? And is that a bad thing?
One of the great things about YouTube is that more people have access to information than before that. One of the challenges about YouTube is that when people see a couple of styles, that it might be decided that that is the correct way to go or that's the thing to do. And so maybe personal variation is different because there's no access to what is cool or what people could be looking like. So I would definitely say I noticed differences 10 years ago than today. And whether that's good or bad, I think that's a personal feeling about that. But that would be something that I've noticed from an observation.
It does take away regional styles, and it's not a bad thing.
Good answer. Felix also says, how much of your lessons is planned or based upon what you see when you arrive and see people dancing?
They're a combination of the two. Joe and I combined have about 3,000 hours teaching together, and that doesn't account for all our individual hours. So we've done a lot of preparation and class planning over the years. So at this point, you might not see us actually plan class, but we are pulling from a huge repository of information. So when we see the class, we're able to change on the fly based on the needs of the students.
And I guess because you've been doing this so long now, you can pretty much just give each other a look and you know where you're going.
True.
You both have the same idea about where you should take a class most of the time.
Sometimes I'll just look at Jo, and then she'll just start talking, and then I follow her lead.
And it can also happen vice versa. Sometimes we will discuss what a possible end goal could be so that we have some idea, but there's multiple paths to get to a particular location. And if students ask some really great questions that take us in a different direction, we're happy to go there since the classes are for them. I mean, as much as it is wonderful to hear ourselves speak for hours on end, it's much more important that the students are getting value out of what they've come for.
We're two individuals, and we obviously have different perspectives on the direction of a class. So when Jo takes the lead, I follow her and support her, because it's usually just as legitimate as a path that I might have gone down. And we both do that with each other, and we find ourselves pleasantly surprised at the end. We're like, oh, that turned out really well.
That worked out quite well.
Or, that was kind of miserable, let's not do that again.
Write that down.
And sometimes one person's brain isn't functioning or whatever, and the other person could pick up. That's the beauty of working in a team, I guess.
Definitely. Like, there'll be a morning. Like, let's say I wake up one morning and I'm just a little bit off-kiltered because I've, had to move out of an apartment, or I didn't have time to grab breakfast, or, I'm late because we weren't staying at the same location or something.
Exactly. We're able to pick up each other's slack if necessary. That's a nice thing about a partnership.
Yeah. So it's always great when at least one of us is totally on the ball, and then you can be like, you know what? I got this. Like, you sort yourself out. I've got this until you're ready to come on board. So that's super great about not teaching solo.
Question on Twitter. Loved your dance in Leeds, it says. They're referring to your social dance. What other dance styles inform or inspire your performances?
Just about every other dance style I've done, whether as a kid I was breakdancing, but I was also doing ballet, tap, and jazz. I've entered the folk dance world, and I'm talking like North American folk dancing, so Cajun, Zydeco, square dancing, contra dancing, as well as Mexican folklorico, but then also in European, so you have Scandinavian hambo and so Swedish hambo, Norwegian rospos. And then a big influence from Hungarian mezőségi from the Romanian Transylvania region, as well as Bulgarian line dances, and then just keeps going on from there.
Has he just made those things up, or do they exist?
Totally. He does this all the time. No, those are legit. For me, the list is a bit shorter. It's ballet, tap, jazz, hip-hop. Those are...
I've heard of those.
Yep. Yeah, so for me, just some of those... The simple dances.
Last question, Alistair on Facebook. Does Jo really feel that uncomfortable in Britain? He's referring here, I think, to the chatter that you have during your lessons. Does Jo really feel that uncomfortable in Britain, or is it just part of the comedy, he says?
You guys are a really sort of a stoic nation, and the humor is hard to take. I get more depressed with the weather. It's the accents are difficult. It's almost like you speak a different language. The food is dreary.
I mean, you're right. The food is dreary.
Yeah. The driving on the opposite side of the road is miserable.
Wildly confusing. It's definitely a large part of the comedy act, but it's also one of those, what does it take to allow people to relax a little bit? And sometimes we will say things that culturally seems maybe inappropriate based on people's physical reaction, even though it's like, you guys, that's not a big deal. And we're going to blow your minds later. So, please don't stop learning because I've said something that seems perhaps not proper. So, you just find moments where you're like, don't worry about it, you guys. We're just Americans trying to have a good time.
I'm still just bitter at the British ruling over North America.
But we had a tea party to celebrate the
I'm
the
still
end
bitter
of it.
About it. I just haven't gotten over it yet.
We've got to get over this. We've got to move on.
Got to move forward.
I hope you were pleased to see that tea plays a large part in, and cake play a large part in dancing.
One of my favorite London expressions is, I'd murder for a cuppa.
Yeah.
I don't know if I said that right.
It's like you are born and bred.
Tea crimes in
tea
London.
Crimes.
Yeah, tea crimes. Like people killing each other just for over a cup of tea. Too much milk, not enough milk.
Mm. Right.
Less sugar.
Quick, cue the tea jokes. Please write in what your favorite tea jokes are after this.
You're here doing private lessons today. I will take up no more of your time. Jo and Kevin and Jo, thank you very much for talking to us today on Rockstep Radio. And there's the phone. Go and get it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Right now at rockstepradio.com, watch our interview with Scott Cupid of Swing Patrol in London in glorious high definition.